everybody. Welcome to the Snapcast. I'm Bobby.
I'm Alex.
I'm Rob.
I'm Jerry.
And I'm Chris.
All right. So here we go. We got the full crew together. So, I mean, I'm sure most people know that for a while we were recording some people on Skype, some people were in and out. Well, we are actually all together here in the beautiful, luxurious, wonderful city of Baltimore here for an open. So we all got together for a fucking episode.
Woo! Yay! Is that a guy getting mugged downstairs?
Absolutely.
All right.
Don't look him in the eye.
Yeah. It'll be fine.
Just let it happen. Anyway, so as you've noticed, I've already dropped one F-bomb this episode. We're going rated R, so I don't know if we have any under 18 listeners, but if we do, go fuck yourselves. Hey!
We still want you to listen.
Yeah. Also, come back afterwards and listen to the rest of the episode.
Also, it's easier for us because this is how we normally talk. We were toning it down, and it hurts.
Yeah, I mean, like, the idea was that it would make it accessible to the largest amount of people, but then over time, it's like, you know, it'd be a lot easier to just be more natural, I guess. So yeah, we're all completely naked, and we're all going to swear as much as we want.
Yeah.
Yay!
Chris has big nipples, and it's bothering me. Just big old peps, you know, pepperoni nips.
It's going to be nice when this goes way off track. It's a bunch of profanity. It's a horrible episode. And then next week, we're like, all right, guys, PG-13 episode of Snapcast. Here we go.
No, this is our dirty, gritty reboot, you know, DC style, even though DC is way worse than Marvel.
Yeah, man. Yeah, so this is going to be a horrible episode. It's directed by Zack Snyder. Here we go.
Oh, no.
But
this is the first time all five of us have been together in so long.
At least a year and a half.
Yeah.
Ugh.
Were all five of us together for the actual 1 year anniversary cast, or was it just the four of us and then one of us was like Skyping through?
Usually it would be.
Yeah, I think we Skype Bobby in for that one.
Yep. Okay. Yeah, because
1 year?
Yeah, for our 1 year anniversary. Yeah, I think we got together for that, but for an actual event though, we've never been together. All five of us?
Yeah, that's I don't think so. I think four was the most we've ever had at once.
Yeah.
Yeah,
Jerry's on the floor.
Yeah. So we're all staying in one hotel room, hopefully for the whole weekend. Who knows, though? Let's see how tonight goes. But
next up off the island.
So what we're doing tonight, though, is we don't have notes. We don't have an agenda. We don't have news or anything like that. We're just firing from the hip, and we're just going to see how it goes. But really, it's just kind of a – honestly, it's more for us than for the listeners, I think we can say. So like Alex is going through a wallet right now.
It's not even my wallet. The
Dixie wallet.
It's wallet. Mine. Awesome. So we're getting kicked out of the
Bass
city
Pro
for sure.
Now it's Chris's. I know it's Chris's now. I had a Bass Pro card.
But let's talk about some of the Modern Open though, because that's what we're here for, is the Modern Open. Anybody want to go first? What are you guys playing? What are you on? Still on Boggles over
Boggles
there,
Boggles naturally.
Come on, guys. Ad nauseum for life.
I'm running Titan Shift. What else would I be running?
Yeah, I'm back on Blue Eye Control because it's actually like a tier 1 modern deck right now. Tier 1.5 at least. Holy cow. I'm not like bottom of the barrel trying to force control.
I am playing the first modern deck I ever built, which was Living End.
Yeah. So we're going back in multiple ways for this episode, for this weekend in general. But yeah, so what do you guys want to talk about? Who's got some topics? Let's do this.
Standard sucks balls.
Oh my gosh. So... as many of you guys know, we've been away for a couple of months, and I was gone for 75 days. And to come back, Copycat finally got banned 2 days after the ban restricted announcement. I thought that was weird.
Island, for the record.
Yes.
Just stay on the topic.
But coming back and just seeing Marvel Works stomping again, it's kind of sad. A lot of people are calling for the banning of Marvel Works. I don't think it's the right call, but with Marvel Works being everywhere, maybe we need to do something about it, or I don't know, maybe unban some cards.
It's got 6 months left, man. Let it live. Live and let live.
I mean, I don't have to play Magic for 6 months.
Yeah, I mean, I think you can just let it live for a while. It's such a hard thing. Bannings in general is a great thing to talk about because it's been so active lately with the bannings, and I get it. I think it was the right move at the time, but I think banning additional things in standards is a bad way to go right now. I mean, I don't know about tournament, like, show attendance. That's the word I'm looking for. Tournament attendance in your area, like, standard wasn't firing before the bannings in my area, and now we have, you know, a healthy 15 people standard. That's not what it used to be, but it's something.
We still don't fire much in my area. Really? Yeah, we didn't fire for the... until stuff was banned the first time. Then we got people interested and like, oh, we'll play if we can get 8 people, and we get like 6.
Ah, jeez.
Yeah.
Yeah, most people are jumping ship to Modern or Draft, but like I said, it was that first FNM after the bannings they actually fired, and people are celebrating because there's quite a few people that have been wanting to play Standard and haven't been able to.
Yeah, when you really look at it though, can you really afford to go up to what, 5 cards banned in Standard?
No,
anymore. No. Like, people were already nervous from when we got kind of ban heavy for Modern. You know, when we hit some of the big decks, and now you're looking at Standard, and it's like, not everyone looks at it from an investment point, but at a certain point, you got to look at it and go, well, every time I dump money into it, whether it's Standard or Modern, or for some people, Legacy in this case, it gets banned.
Oh, yeah, that's right. We haven't had a cast since the top got banned.
I feel so bad for the top players, man. Like, that was the tier one control deck. And I feel bad for you all.
Once upon a time, it was like, what, maybe a year ago, I started selling off the pieces that I had for it because I thought Tom was going to get banned, and I felt stupid for like a year, and now finally I'm like, all right, see, that's why I sold out of it.
Yeah,
I knew it was
and at least you sold when prices were kind of high too.
Yeah, it was before like the reprints and stuff.
Yeah, you know what's even worse about that though? Because of that, the resurgence of all the old Deathblade decks are coming back, and now Deathrite Shaman is one of the highest played cards in Modern that now it's in the crosshairs for banning.
You mean Legacy?
Legacy. I apologize, guys.
Learn
you
words,
know where I'm at.
Jerry.
Yo, Deathrite Shaman's going to wind
what,
up being like...
What is Deathrite going for right now, price-wise? Because I know what it was at before.
$8 to $10.
Okay, so it hasn't skyrocketed much yet.
Nah. I mean, I don't think Legacy really drives prices quite like that. I mean, people aren't jumping off decks that quickly.
No, the only card that really spiked because of Legacy is Leovold, and it was already a Commander staple because it was an ignorant Commander deck.
Deathrite Shaman is $5.
Man, so it went down.
Get it right now because it's cheap.
Yeah,
not bad time. Why are you so wrong at everything?
Can't help it, man. Deathrite Shaman was played.
That's the whole problem, though, with bannings is whenever you ban cards, you're not guaranteed at all to get a healthy metagame, and it seems like... I don't want to say it like this because it sounds so negative, but I almost feel like the good metagames that we've had in Magic in any format have kind of been luck, not necessarily the doings of Magic and R&D. I mean, I think we're seeing either they've lost people recently and this is the trains coming off the tracks, not in like a doom and gloom way, or they just were never that great at it, but it kind of worked itself out.
It was mostly luck.
That's where I put my money.
We can go back to what I think is all our favorite standards, RTR Theros. None of us would have guessed Mono Blue would be an aggro deck. Like, that's just not a thing we would have assumed.
That's true.
It happened in the design, and hey, guess what we got? One of the best formats of all time.
Yeah, it was good. I mean, I know people complained about the time, but I think most people would be happy to go back to that right now. I would definitely sleep with Blue Light Control. Any of those decks, really.
Yeah, the diversity of that format was great. So many decks. But just, like, the fact that Wizards had to make an announcement that they now have a team designed to look at formats like Standard and Modern, like, that should have been a thing the whole time. And the fact that they made an announcement that, yeah, we're doing this now is just so disappointing.
And like, that was half the problem with Extended was there was no design team for that. And Extended died, they made Modern. Why hasn't this been a thing since 2011?
Right, nope. And I almost see this as maybe they're acknowledging, hey, we know we've been screwing up in the past and this is our correction. But even still, like, I don't even know as a company if that's something I want to admit of. Hey, we were lacking this major, you know, department that should have already existed.
Yeah, no, I mean, that was like reading that announcement was this thing of like, oh, cool, I'm glad they're going to do this. And as I'm reading the description of what it's going to be, I'm like, wait, hang on a minute. Like, this wasn't already. I thought we were improving this thing, not just putting it into place for now for the first time.
And honestly, the biggest thing is Rosewater needs to go. That guy's a fucking idiot.
Shots fired.
You heard it from the Snapcast. Mark Rosewater, you're a fucking idiot.
Facts.
Yeah, it's true.
No, I know. It's tough because it's like, he seems like a fine guy. Community seems to be 50-50 on him. They love him or hate him. But it does seem like they need more serious processes. This needs to be, and I know it sucks because it's sort of boring. It's like an artistic thing. You don't want to tell someone how to write a song or anything, but at the same time, like, what they create in that R&D session and what they send out to the world is going to have a big financial effect on people. I mean, it could, if you make a deck that they buy into and you get the ban, you've cost that person money. And I mean, I know we all know that's the inherent risk, but I swear, like 2-3 years ago, this wasn't a thing that we really worried about.
No, not at all.
No. The last emergency ban was Memory Jar. And I don't know if you know how powerful Memory Jar, it's fucking powerful, and Like, Emrakul is a great top end, sure, but it is not Memory Jar.
Yeah.
Especially Reflector Mage. Like, get out of here.
When you compare Memory Jar to Felidar Guardian, you just go, what?
Well, Emergency Ban. I think that's the issue, is because if you look at older cards that were banned, they were just too powerful. You know, I mean, things like Jace the Mind Sculptor, there's always the story of how he was edited last minute to add the fourth ability and right before printing. It happens. That was a mistake, clearly. Yep. The bannings that we see now are more, we did not test this format properly.
Right.
We missed something that these single cards on their own are completely fine power level. It's not an issue there. It's when you combined them.
And the funniest thing was when the Guardian actually got released from in a spoiler, like, anyone who even pays attention to spoilers picked up on it immediately that it could combo somehow if you could just blink it over and over again. And, oh, look, we have an awesome Mythic
that's the same thing too.
Block that does it. How do you miss that on a design level?
Well, they even said in their testing, like when they banned it, they admitted that during their testing, somebody brought up, hey, if you have two Felidar Guardians and a way to blink, this goes infinite. Is that a problem? And they're like, no. Even though it combos like Saheeli, Eldrazi Displacer to like infinitely blink and stuff, like there are several things in standard that could easily set up a combo, and they're just like, no, it's fine.
Like, there's a reason Restoration Angel says blink target non-angel creature.
Right.
Like, if it had said just something like non-cat creature, I think it would have been fine.
And the Felidar is just straight up permanent.
Yeah.
Yeah, or even if it gets released and it's something they're aware of and they know that this is going to be a thing, then you can build answers into the set. You can be more prepared for it, whereas this case was clearly, oh shit, what have we done? What should we do? And then they sit on the sidelines because you don't want to be too ban heavy, so they let it go for a long time. I mean, it went through how many banned announcements before it finally got banned?
Two. It made it through two banned announcements before it got banned, and then the e-ban that happened 2 days later.
Yeah.
Which, in and of itself, several players got punished, because the minute the original announcement was released, the Saheeli buyout was real.
Yeah, everyone was waiting for that announcement because everyone thought it was so obvious it was going to get banned. And then when it didn't, people went, shit, I guess I'm buying this deck.
Yep, buying some Saheelis, man, make money off of it.
Which almost made me wonder if they maybe watched some of the card buying websites. The fact that it was 48 hours later, like, oh, look, every website that sells these cards is sold out on it now.
Now, Wizards can't officially acknowledge the secondary market. Right. But, come on.
Right. Now, what some people are saying about the 48-hour later ban is that they did a release on Magic Online to see how Amonkhet interacted with Copycat. And apparently within that 48 hours, again, this is all hearsay, they were able to determine, nope, Amonkhet does not do enough to stop Copycat. We need to ban Copycat.
Well, 48 hours is not enough to like design, tune, test, and play a real deck out of Amonkhet.
And also, the percentages were skewed because it was the same 4 to 5 knuckleheads playing this deck in challenges that has already been tuned to their perfection. Well,
hang on real quick, though, before we go too far. Someone tried to check. I think that was Wizard's statement, right? Wasn't that Wizard's excuse? Was that they wanted to see what would happen on MTGO?
Yes.
Rob, verify that. We don't want people listening to this at work losing their minds right now yelling at us. These idiots. It wasn't hearsay. They said it. But, yeah. I mean, to me, that sounds like the most BS mistake ever. The impression that I get just from the scenario is that they didn't ban it. The community as a collective went, what the fuck? Like, everyone was expecting this. Pros started speaking out. Everybody started speaking out and saying, can't believe this wasn't banned. And as soon as they saw that backlash, they went, guys, I think we messed up. Like, I think this should have been banned.
Yeah.
What can we possibly come up with as an excuse for why we didn't ban it right away?
It should have been Pro Tour Copycat. They should have rested. You know, they already done did it. They should have just dealt with it, made Pro Tour Copycat a thing, and then banned it after the Pro Tour like they said they were going to do. You know, they have a ban list every now, what, 8 times a year?
Some
crazy amount of numbers.
And the Wizards hasn't stuck to anything they've said in the past couple years. Format rotation, they went back on that. Oh, emergency bannings. Like,
I don't understand why it was a thing from day one. I mean, as soon as they were both released, spoiled the Copycat.
Yeah.
People started putting up pictures of Splinter Twin.
Yeah.
And if it was too powerful for Modern,
yeah,
why would it be okay for Standard?
Yep. And yes, that was Wizards' explanation, by the way. To quote, it was, our plan was to monitor early play behavior and pro competition and make a call following the Pro Tour. What we expected to take a few weeks to understand has ended up taking 2 days to form a clear picture of a metagame unbalanced by the Copycat.
No.
Yeah, that's bullshit. If you were going to wait for a few weeks, you would have waited it out, because no one's going to have new decks built with the new, like, the format didn't have any time to evolve. So it was obviously people just playing what was already obviously good.
Yeah, they upgraded what they essentially identified as an upgrade.
I don't even know if it got any upgrades. Did it in that set?
Copycat?
Copycat? Yeah. It got Glory Bringer.
Yeah.
Oh, right.
It got
right.
Super Cheese.
But like, yeah, no, that was a case of they had to pull the plug on that. Because if you're going to wait 2 days, like if you're going to wait 2 weeks and then you change your mind for 2 days, no way. I don't buy that at all.
Arguably the most powerful iteration of the deck was it was working. It was using Marvel itself where it would end a turn, Marvel a piece of the combo, and then you just play the other piece on your turn.
Yeah.
Which was pretty dumb.
Overall, though, I mean, I think when you look at the grand scheme of it, it was they let a R&D error slip out. That went to print. They did not ban it the first time. They did not ban it the second time. And then they emergency banned it a few days later. Like, every single step of that was a mistake.
Yeah.
Because, I mean, we can look in hindsight now with where we are. It's banned. That's the end. Hopefully, that's the end of the story. Do they ever do emergency unbannings? Because, I mean, maybe the story's not over yet. But overall, though, you can see that was a mistake, and they missed it multiple times.
See, you mentioned emergency unbanning, and someone had mentioned in a comment section in TCG Player of all places, they said, instead of banning things, how about we emergency release cards in the standard? For example, the standard format was run by Saheeli, Gideon, Marvel, effectively, for the longest time, and then it just devolved into just straight Saheeli decks. Why did we not have Pithing Needle? Really?
It's not a bet. Logistically, it seems like a nightmare, because you'd either have to print that card into it, or you just, like... I feel like you're sort of... It's like the duct tape fix, you know what I mean?
His argument for it was is that you print a card that's ubiquitous and has been printed enough times to where even if you released it in standard, it isn't going to exceed like the $10 mark. Pithing Needle just happened to be that card because it's been printed 4 or 5 times now.
The real answer, though, is that it should have been in the set.
Yes,
like 100% that's, you know that. What I mean? R&D, that's the real answer, is that or something that effect should have been in the set. Something should have been in the set to be ready
and that takes
this.
Me to the whole point of the R&D has stopped printing hosers for a while now. Like...
They've stopped printing grave interaction in all forms. Like, they want Planeswalkers to be the marquee, so Planeswalker removal is at an all-time low. You don't even get instant speed anymore. There's no Hero's Downfall. Like, I would be happy to have Hero's Downfall right now. Hero's Downfall would have helped the copycat problem.
Yeah, would have just stalled that right in its tracks.
And it would have made for a healthy metagame, because now you lose the Planeswalker, you have this crappy cat creature, and cool.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Here we are.
Yeah.
Like, you know what I mean? But it's punishing enough to where like that could be a healthy metagame.
Yeah, we haven't had instant speed Planeswalker removal since, what was that, Slumgar's Command?
Sure, because that saw play.
4 or 5?
Right.
Yeah.
But, I mean,
playable Hero's Downfall.
So really, right, Hero's Downfall was really the last really good instant speed Planeswalker removal we had. So
I mean, you could argue Anguished in Making, but...
I don't feel like paying 5 life to get rid of a Gideon, though.
Right.
Yeah, so, I mean, really, and that's a good point, though, that you bring up, Alex, because I think that might be where this all started to go wrong, and I think it's where it started to pull the curtain back and show they didn't become incompetent, they've been incompetent. You know what I mean? Because you start restricting, like, I think naturally they created answers without really meaning to. Things like Hero's Downfall, things like that, that were fine to print. They were good answers.
Yeah.
They didn't have to put a lot of thought into it. Now they're pulling back instants, they're pulling back sorceries. All of that's getting weaker, creatures getting more powerful, and here we are.
Yeah. I mean, that once again, that's Mark Waterswater's call on his fault, because he said he wants Magic to be creature-based. He wants creatures on the table doing things, and that's how the game interacts. But, like, if you can't have answers for the creatures, the game sucks.
Yeah, it's just coin flip. Who goes for wins? It's like Yu-Gi-Oh. I don't want that.
So to sort of transition to another topic, then, do you think that's because of Hearthstone? I'm trying to remember the dates in my head, like, around when this shift towards creatures started to go.
Oh, that's true. If
the
that
shift
was that
towards creatures,
when Hearthstone
that
was picking up.
Creatures started picking up. Back in our original Lara block.
It's been going on for a while, but I would say, like, after Theros, I think we got a real strong shift.
Okay, good point. Theros with the gods being released, you know, Thassa being
the gods,
she was,
and then you had, like, the
Siege
three
Rhino,
color,
Mantis,
like,
Rider.
Yeah.
That whole crew of knuckleheads. Yeah, I mean, that sounds about the right time. Hearthstone started maybe 2-3 years ago, really picking up in popularity.
And I'm all about, you know, having good creatures to play on the battlefield, but it's got to be a balance. Like, I think, you know, Bobby should be able to sleeve up some cards in any block at any given time. And granted, he might have to play to a higher ability, but control of just, you know, straight control with just a few creatures to close the game out should exist. But I mean, it seems like anymore you have to play creatures to win the game, and that's just not fun if that's not your play style. You know, if you like controlling the game, right now is not, I would say, not the time to be playing Magic.
And you know what? You mentioned it. Blue-white control has the top end in Standard. Too bad it doesn't have the spell base to use it.
Yeah.
Counter Magic is not good when like, every card is a threat.
You're also saying blue-white has potential like now, or like blue. There's been a lot of like blue-red control popping up and seeing play lately, but it's after so many cards were banned. That's when control can finally be good. It needed four cards banned for control to exist. Like, that's a problem.
That is very, very sad. Yes, I agree.
The thing that bugs me the most about it, though, is that I think instants and sorceries and all of the interactions with the stack and instant speed versus sorcery versus like responding to things before they resolve, that all to me is a huge part of why I like Magic the Gathering. And I feel like we're moving away from that. And that's
the decision making.
Because I mean, yeah, exactly. It's the being able to sort of interact, and it. Hearthstone is boring to me. I know people probably listen to this and enjoy Hearthstone, and that's fine if you like it. But when it first started to grow in popularity, I tried it out and I just hated it. And the biggest thing that bothered me was there's no instant speed. There's no casting things during your opponent's turn. I know there's like the trap cards or the whatever they're called in that game. But
yeah, there's not even like...
It's a very, very handicapped, toned-down version of what you have in Magic. And I'm like, that's not good enough. I like Magic.
In Magic, I feel like a spellcaster. You know, I picture it in my head. I'm going to cast... imagine I'm the burn player. I'm trying to lightning bolt you, and you're going to protect yourself with counterspell. That's how I see it. That's how I've always seen Magic. I've never seen Magic as this game with creatures. You know, creatures were supplemental to your victory.
They're optional. Yeah,
but they didn't. You know, now we're just forced into this world where we have to.
Yeah, Hearthstone was to me, and I've played a little bit too. Is always more of a like a worker placement, you know, build your army, send it the opponent kind of thing. Cause you just do it all on your turn. Okay, answer this.
Yeah.
Oh, you did your thing. Okay, I'll answer that. Like, it's not interactive.
And I get why you would want to. I can easily see why you would look at Hearthstone and go, wow, this is blowing up in popularity. This is great. I don't think it's any secret that Magic has very large and bloated rule sets. It's very hard to get into. It's not very friendly to newcomers at the beginning. And I'm sure that horrible MTGO client that we have has to do with all of the rules that are programmed into it.
Can't you play Hearthstone mobile, though?
Yes.
I think that's the bigger... It's technology.
Oh, yeah. That's what I was kind of getting into, yeah.
They're harnessing technology. I mean, you can play it on your phone. Could you imagine trying to play Magic on your phone?
I'd be fired tomorrow. Yeah.
Like, what phone was having the problems with Galaxy the battery 7. Smoking? Yeah, that would be everyone's phone in America.
Getting bolted in real life.
Trying to run the Moto app.
Oh, 3 damage to target player. Shit in my face.
Oh. Yeah. But, yeah, I mean, it's... Like I said, I wonder if the rule set and the intricacies of Magic are what is keeping them from being able to go digital like that. And I mean, I know there's rumors of Magic Next or Digital Next or whatever they're going to do. No one's really sure what that is yet. But yeah, I don't blame them. I get it. I feel like Magic sort of blew up in popularity not right before, but in the grand scheme of things, it was right before everything started to go online. And this esports community now is blowing up. It's huge. I mean, I see like advertisements for Street Fighter tournaments while I'm watching like baseball games and stuff.
It's on TV. It's
awesome.
TV.
I love it. And I'm sure Magic wants a piece of that, but it's like, it's one of the hardest games to watch. Like, you can't watch it as a fan. You know what I mean?
Right.
Like, without, like, being a player. You have to play it to be able to watch it. I can watch baseball. I've never played baseball. I get it. It's simple enough. There's no equivalent.
Even, like,
Magic.
Street Fighter. I suck at Street Fighter, but I'll still watch some other people
smash each
other.
Right, you understand what's going on immediately.
Yeah,
they got life bars. All right, cool. One guy dies. One guy fights more people in the street.
Energy. We get the
Sometimes they fight cars. That part doesn't make any sense. But
that was only, like, one game.
Hey, now, those Hondas, man.
Yeah, they got
to
die.
A little animation going up in the corner so it, like, reacts to whatever you cast.
Jace
like,
just giving people middle fingers.
And then
cut it out.
Claymation of Jerry. Counterspell.
Claymation of Jerry. Oh, everyone turns off immediately. Yeah, I'm never watching this again. Oh, man. Yeah, but no, it sucks, but I think Magic either needs to go, hey, we're going all in into a different product that we can make marketable like esports, or we pump the brakes and we back off and we just do our thing. We're Magic.
But unfortunately, just doing the same thing and staying on the same track is not the way to do that. And part of that is with their own
R&D. The current track?
Yeah. And like the part of that is with the R&D of, oh, we're designing sets 3 years out. Oh, cool. So these sets that are coming out, you designed 3 years ago and you're wrong.
Yeah.
So you're still
Cat.
Wrong.
You
right.
Cat. back in 2014.
They've had years to think of this.
Get out of here.
They always act like that's like a point of pride. We're so far. This stuff we're releasing is old. We're working on, you know, 2022 magic. Like, no one cares. Whatever.
No, you're terrible. You need to focus
on the current magic, it seems like. Yeah. But yeah, no, I think right now what's going on is they're sort of half-stepping into that world of how can we be more like Hearthstone? How can we be more accessible? How can we make this more friendly to people? I just want to throw it on Twitch and watch what's going on. And I think they're kind of missing the mark on both sides.
It's for simple. Sure. You get Yu-Gi-Oh! Fucking dual discs, and we have holograms.
No.
Stop it.
All right.
Jerry, I will take my Blue Eyes White Dragon and shove it down your fucking throat.
Yo, man, if you got them original Kaiba ones, they're worth at least $20.
If I could, I would hang up this Skype call right now.
That's the downside to being in person. We're stuck here.
Yeah, got them, kids. They're locked in the hotel room with me.
Well,
me
not
a,
locked.
Give me a book. I can hang them up.
But yeah, so what, I mean, for you guys, though, how do you feel about that? What can Magic do? And, I mean, this is something they're struggling with, so I don't expect great answers, but what can Magic do to push towards that digital age? Everything short of Claymation Jerry's is fine.
So back in the day, didn't they do like a recruit type thing, like where the Guru Lands came from? They printed stuff to try and get people to come back in, and now
they're doing that now with invocations and expeditions and masterpieces. Like,
but none of
Wizards is hemorrhaging a lot of money right now, and they're doing things like that to get people in. That's why we got so many master sets lately.
But it's focused more on, I think that's more focused on ooh shiny, and the value.
Yeah, so much on people buy it so they have money to continue operations.
Let's
sit down and actually teach people how to play.
No, I like where you're going with that. I wanted to step in real quick on the invocation stuff, though, because I thought the point of that was to lower the price of standard, because more people are packing cracks to get, you know, that bling bling.
And that has happened. That has
gay
packing cracks.
Cracking packs.
That has happened, though. That is actually a thing.
Yeah. I mean, that's one that I think that was a good idea.
Right.
They're ugly.
But see, that's one of those things where Wizards is saying they're doing it to lower prices, but they can't acknowledge the secondary market. So they can't actually use that as an excuse. It's for them to sell packs.
Yeah. I mean, yeah, which is, it's the same thing as lowering the prices.
Right.
Yeah. It has the same effect. But I like what Chris was saying there, going back to it, like ways to bring people into standard. And something that kind of popped into my head as he was saying that was, what if you have this might be a horrible idea, but let's see what happens. What if you have a format of Magic that is simpler? It's more like Hearthstone. It's an entry-level format. And then almost what's happening right now, you reserve sort of the old school style of Magic for Modern and Legacy. You just support those better.
I mean, it would be unreasonable.
Yeah, or I'm behind it.
Remember the tokens event deck that they made for Modern?
Oh, like the black white.
Yeah, they tried.
It wasn't. Don't get me wrong. It wasn't like the full power black white token.
Yeah, I mean they have to make money. Like,
yeah,
they can't,
but it was close enough that a lot. Like when I was looking at getting into Modern, people said, "Hey, look at this. This isn't a half bad deck to start with. Then you're just a few pieces, and boom, then you're in a competitive deck." And you know, the event decks are kind of dead, but I don't think any of the event decks they were making at the time were really any good besides that one. But if they could,
the desecration demons and stuff,
And then the Modern one. But if they took the time to look at like the Modern one and maybe give a little bit of time for Standard to shake out, and then say, hey, all right, we're gonna build Aetherworks Marvel. It's gonna cost you X amount of money. And you're going to be in it. Let's say it's not full power. Let's say it's 80% power. So you still go and you want to crack some more packs to get those last pieces. But at least someone could know what it's like to play with some decent power. And they come with the stupid little guide that tells you how to play it. You know, like, oh, all right, then do this. And
I think that'll fall on this new team of testing it to see if they can actually figure out what cards are powerful or not to be able to put the right cards in those decks and things.
What do you think is going to be the effect of that, though? Because keep in mind,
I'm hoping it.
Who are you going to get to test it?
Well, they announced like Melissa Del Toro and like a couple other.
For pros, yeah.
Actual people who've been on the pro tour are testing the sets.
But I'm hoping we never actually see their influence. I hope they stop all this shit before it ever gets printed. I hope Wizards like, hey, we're thinking about this card, and they're just like, no. Then we never have to worry about this again.
Yeah.
I want them to be the nameless, faceless heroes that we deserve.
What about the junior nationals they used to have? The junior tournaments that they had way back? I believe that was the 90s, early 2000s they were running those.
I mean, that was a Wild West back then.
Right.
Literally,
right.
I mean, you called a phone number and you qualified.
So, like the junior super series that they used to run?
Yeah, the JSS. Like,
for the younger kids to be able to, you know, get those wins in and enjoy competitive Magic, they tell their friends about it. And that could be a recruiting tool to get your more younger crowd for
Didn't they give them college tuition, too, I think it was? That's what their earnings was?
It was some of it. College money. We get them hooked on that college money. But, I mean, it's tough because I think the problem is some you want more people in standard, but I think it's also some you just want people to be able to watch this game on TV and kind of understand what's going on. And that's the really tricky part. And maybe that does mean that we simplify standard, and maybe that does mean, I mean, something that would be really interesting, going back to the idea of sort of having standard and like supporting the older formats too, would be sets that we release that are not standard legal. I mean, that would be a huge jump. I doubt they would ever do it, but how insane would that be to have, you know, return to Ravnica set that goes straight to modern and jumps over standard, and it's more like, you know, sorcery, instant speed kind of cards, things like that. Someone just got murdered outside of our hotel room. Oh man,
hobo down,
save him.
But somebody, yeah, so but I mean, it's because, like I said, it's, we're sort of going back and forth about two different problems. But, you know, that overall, that is the thing. Is, I mean, what got me thinking about this was I saw an article on Kotaku, like, I don't know, 2 or 3 weeks ago now. And basically what the idea of the article was that, like, something like 40 or 50% of people that watch esports don't actually play the games that they're watching. So it's people watching like League of Legends and Hearthstone and things like that. They don't even play the game. Nope. And I was like, man, see, and that's what got me thinking. I'm like, that's impossible with Magic. You have to, I mean, you know, you have it on and like my wife walks by and it's nothing. It's hieroglyphics on the screen. Who knows?
I don't know.
Well, I don't mean to cut y'all off. We are hitting the 30-minute mark for our part one. So.
Dope. Yeah, let's take a break.
All right, we'll take a break.
Send the drink. We'll be right back.
Dope.
Hey everyone, welcome back to part two. I'm Rob.
And I'm Jerry.
So, we're introducing ourselves again. The reason for that is it is now Thursday, and our first recorded session happened last Friday, almost a week ago. So, and the reason for this is after day one of the Modern Open, we were going to do part two. Well, we decided, it's been a while since we've been together. We went out, we had a great night, had a few too many drinks, and we just couldn't finish doing the podcast. And finally, we have time where we could sit down in front of our computers and do it. So you've got Jerry and myself. And first thing we're going to talk about before we get into the Modern Open is spoilers. Mainly, Nicol Bolas. Jerry, my God.
Wow. This is a very interesting card. First off, let's talk about its implications, as that it is a fatty boom boom that is now in addition to Ulamog alongside Aetherworks Marvel.
Yes.
Like, unbelievable how this is, like, casting this on turn four in front of your opponent, that plus one to make each opponent exile two cards from his or her hand is almost like a mind twist at that point in the game.
Yep.
It's that kind of backbreaking.
And that's not the only plus this card has.
No, it's a... hold on, let me take a step back here. I'll explain the abilities, go one by one. Nicol Bolas, comma, God hyphen Pharaoh. That's a lot of initials there. Costs 4, a blue, black, and a red for a Bolas Planeswalker. Plus 2, target opponent exiles cards from the top of his or her library until he or she exiles a non-land card. Until the end of your turn, you may cast that card without paying its mana cost. Plus 1. Each opponent exiles 2 cards from his or her hand. Minus 4. Nicol Bolas, God Pharaoh, deals 7 damage to target opponent or creature an opponent controls. And minus 12. Exile each non-land permanent your opponents control. Starts at 7 loyalty.
That is just... That's incredible. And... Again, I kind of see a flaw in this, in that Wizards has not done the full playtesting of the previous sets of Standard, and then throwing in Nicol Bolas, God Pharaoh.
Now, to their defense here, Ulamog into Aetherworks Marvel was never supposed to happen.
Right.
They did not test for that. Now, this was supposed to happen. Yep. This is what they really want.
Even with the 18-month rotation that they used to have, this would be seen.
Yeah. I mean, is this what they really want? A turn four Nicol Bolas? I mean, this Nicol Bolas is already better than the old one, being that it's easier to cast, comes out with bigger loyalty, and does a much better version of protecting itself than the other one did.
Absolutely.
But
I mean, one of the big things I see on it is that coming down, you're either killing a fatty they have to protect itself, or you are starting your opponent's hand destruction.
Yes. That's typically what happens. And in certain situations, depending on the deck type that's being played, that plus two is either going to be backbreaking or it does nothing.
So, here's like the most bizarre worst case scenario now, okay? You're in the Aetherworks Marvel. You spin, you hit Nicol Bolas. You plus two, you start exiling your opponent's tops until they hit a non-land card. Say they hit land Ulamog. Now you're casting Ulamog for free. You just slammed Ulamog and Nicol Bolas without paying any mana.
That is where it's really good. Now, where it's really bad is if you flip up a couple cards and you hit, like, against zombies. Zombies has nothing you want to hit in it.
Right.
So, if you're going to hit, like, I mean, you can start building your own zombie army by plus twoing over and over again. Seems pretty sweet. Play your opponent's deck. But that requires so much work, and they're already ahead on the board state with zombies when right. you do this. Because if you're marveling into it, you're playing the Marvel cards. And the Marvel cards don't really give you board presence. Like, you're talking about when you get the perfect 6 energy on turn 4 to spin this, odds are you've played a copy of a Woodweaver's Puzzle Knot, broke it, and maybe a copy of Attune with Aether to have a total of 8 energy.
Yep, yeah, you have that route. You could also go the Attune with Aether, the Puzzle Knot, and then the is it colored one?
Yeah, the Rogue Refiner from Rogue Refiner and his other buddy, Whirl of Virtuoso.
Yes.
But the thing is, a 2-3 isn't going to stop a horde of zombies.
Nope.
So, Nicol Bolas being able to go up to 9 is big game.
Yeah.
Like, it's going to be... Your opponent has to have a pretty good board state, which is not out of the question. If you plus 2 Nicol Bolas, there is a reasonable expectation that they can... there is a possibility that when they untap, they can just 9-ball the Nicol Bolas. So... Bringing it back down a little bit, I don't think the plus two is where we're at, is what I'm saying. Yeah. Matchup dependent.
Right. And again, well, what I explained was the absolute best case scenario for the guy playing Aetherworks.
Oh, yeah. In the mirror match, you're going to hit a new Lamog and the tables are going to get flipped. That is ridiculous.
And then his minus four, 7 damage to an opponent also. That's not just target creature, it's also target opponent.
Yep.
So that's a good game ender in itself right there.
Yep, he can kill somebody.
So now, if you are going against this deck, you have to be worried about, once you hit 7 life, of, oh no, all it takes is an Ulamog, or sorry, a Nicol Bolas, and I'm dead.
Yep.
And that, the ultimate is just game ending.
I agree. If you get the ultimate off, you have won. But you're already, like, this is actually what I think is the worst part of Nicol Bolas is his ultimate. Because if you're able to get him up to ultimate status, you are already doing what the ultimate wants to do anyways.
Right.
You're already killing off their creatures, busting up their permanents. I don't know if the ultimate is that good. I'm more inclined to believe that the plus one is his best feature.
Yeah, I would say the plus one and the minus four. Are the two best. Just being able to, again, just slam 7 to your opponent's face or take out a majority of anything that exists in the realm of standard right now.
Yeah. I don't know. I don't think there is anything outside of Ulamog that survives the minus 4. I mean, I guess Kozilek, sure, but who's playing Kozilek?
Right.
Another important feature to mention is Nicol Bolas God Pharaoh is probably the best Planeswalker in Commander. Duretti, Scrap Savant, the mono red one, was arguably the best one for the longest time because he filters his own Trash for Treasure, and that's broken.
Right.
We know Trash for Treasure is broken in that format, but we allow it because it has a cost. But each opponent exiles two cards from his or her hand. That's really strong in Commander. That's one card makes people lose six cards. That's really good card disadvantage in your favor, and that's every turn. And I'm a fan of that.
Oh, yeah. And another thing kind of just to note about this Nicol Bolas compared to the others, he's the cheapest one so far.
Yeah, they keep getting cheaper. They keep getting cheaper.
Like, I mean, I'm looking at the old Time Spiral one right now, and my God, that art is just... That's J.R.R. Tolkien dragon right there.
Yeah, it is. Yeah, we always got laugh at it and just like, oh, so janky.
Just chilling in a chair reading a book. But, so, do you think this is going to finally get Marvel Works banned?
I think so, yes, because people will get sick of it. It's more of a... All right, so Marvel right now is the best deck in Standard, bar none.
Yep.
Like, Black-White Zombies can compete with it, being that they play mainboard copies of Anguished Unmaking. But even then, if they just have six energy and spin it, the Anguished Unmaking isn't going to help you.
Right.
So bar none, this is the best deck in the format. When, say, like, say they let this deck survive, you get Nicol Bolas and Ulamog together for 6 months, I think it is, and then Ulamog cycles out. If they let it survive to that point, which would stun me, because people will be sick of seeing it, I don't think their deck is as powerful. There are going to be times when in the Marvel world, there's going to be times where the Ulamog is better than the Nicol Bolas, but with the resurgence of people trying to make red blue control a thing, you know, countering all the Marvels, making sure they don't resolve, there is a possibility that Nicol Bolas is the better card. They're just blowing out their hand.
Right.
So I think it could lead to a banning because people will just be sick of Marvel. It'll be the number one deck for a while.
Yeah, and an interesting thing to note, in the Classic in Baltimore for Standard, Temur Energy actually won. Granted, there were four Aetherworks decks in the top eight, but they rounded out the bottom of the top eight.
So, yeah, I mean, the deck will survive. It's not going to be some, all the cards in the deck are already a good deck as it is. That's what I'm trying to say.
Yeah.
What's his name? Shout out to Matt Tumovich. That's who played it.
Yeah, good job on you, man.
But yeah, the deck is already... You're not going to... The nice thing is with the banning, if Marvel does get banned, the deck's cards are all still playable in a strong, strong mid-range deck. Like, I've played plenty of games where Whirler Virtuoso has hands down won games because I spat out Thopters every turn. A couple other notes to put into his deck. He's playing Glorybringer in his list.
Nice.
So there's your Glorybringers. And three Chandra Torch of Defiance in the main deck, obviously. I think she's become basically a staple at this point. It's really hard not to play her.
Yeah.
And also in that top eight, shout out to Bobby's estranged, non-existent brother, Evan Whitehouse, for finishing 5th through 8th with Marvelous Energy.
Yep.
We found that guy, made some jokes, and there he is, top eighting the Classic. But man, I'm freaking stoked. I really do hope that I get to play with the deck long enough before it gets banned out.
Oh yeah. Yeah, no, because I really want that to happen in the mirror where I get to +2 my Nicol Bolas and I hit Ulamog and I just kinda look at him like, well, what do you got?
And you know what's even better? Like the most versions of the deck, the Energy Marvel deck, are also playing Chandra Flamecaller.
Yeah.
Like, that's silly. Like, oh my god, that's so silly. Oh, Nicol Bolas into my Chandra. Oh, here's a Chandra. Sweep your board. Good luck stopping me.
Oh yeah, that's immediate -4 on Chandra at that point. Like, I don't care if she dies.
Yeah, I don't care if she dies. This Nicol Bolas is sitting and you're dying. Like, hope you got cast out because you're not dealing with this.
Alright, so let's talk about the main event, the Modern Open.
Good God.
Ugh. One thing, but before we talk about how good or bad we did, mainly bad, this was the first Open where all of us got together, and I can't thank you guys enough for the amazing time that we had.
No, I enjoyed playing with you guys. It's always a pleasure to get the five of us together. It had been, a year and a half?
Yep.
Just one of those, it just happened to happen, and we got it. We got there, boys. It took us a minute.
So, as everyone saw, or if you didn't see, if you look at our Facebook, we did a round-by-round update. Jerry, you were on Ad Nauseam, by nobody's surprise, and I was on Jun Titan Shift.
Surprise.
How did your day go? What decks did you see? And where do you think, could you have done better, or did you just run into some bad matchups?
So round one was my first loss, and I ran into my absolute worst possible matchup. And I didn't even eyeball it correctly, because he was on the Grixis Shadow list that Brad Nelson played to win the whole thing.
Ooh, okay.
And I thought it was Sultai Shadow, and I was wrong. I think he had like a copy of Tarmogoyf as an addition to the deck, but he was pretty much that list almost card for card, 73 of the 75.
Gotcha.
That is such a bad matchup for Ad Nauseam. Like, it's awful game one. Like, your best out against them, because they're just going to rip your hand apart. There's nothing you can do about that. Your best bet is to backdoor them by Angel's Grace, Spoils of the Vault, naming Lightning Storm, and killing them because they went to three. And that is not a way to win a game of Magic. Good notes. I beat up Affinity players.
Nice.
I went, if I'm not mistaken, I played two matches against Affinity, and I power slammed them both. 2-0 victories, fantastic for me. I ended up catching Goryeos, which is a bad matchup because they're faster, but I eked out based on consistency, so I got away with the win there.
Yeah, and that's always my concern with that Goryeos Vengeance deck is, yes, it is an amazing cannon when it fires.
And my one matchup, then, this is the one that upset me the most. And I can't say it really upset me. He just managed to sideboard correctly, and I ended up winding up drawing into the deck this way. It was against Boggles. I beat him. He beat me game one, which is unheard of. I don't think I've lost a game one to Boggles in such a long time with Ad Nauseam. I just never drew the combo. Variance happens. Game two, he ended up hard casting Leyline, and he was tapped out. And he's like, yes, I got you. All right. And he's like, pass turn. I'm like, cool. Draw my card. I'm like, all right, I'm gonna combo kill you, Lab Man. And he just had to look on his face like, oh, Laboratory Maniac. So he went back to his board, and I'm like, I know he's bringing in Path to Exile. I end up drawing my deck, doing my thing, drawing my cards, filtering out. I wind up getting the position where next attack he kills me, and my hand is Lab Man, Spoils of the Vault, Angel's Grace, Serum Visions. I have 7 mana. And I'm like, the other card in my hand is a land. It's not a Pact of Negation. And he's got one white source up. So I'm like, I'm dead next turn anyways, so he's either got to have the path or he doesn't. So I go to combo, play the Lab Man, grace myself so I can't lose the game. Spoils naming a card not in my deck. I named Savage Beating because I'm a funny guy. That is a Magic card. It is in Mirrodin. Flip the deck over, played Serum Visions, tried to win the game. He had the path.
Duh.
So you have to try to go for the win there, and I just didn't have it.
Gotcha.
Like, I didn't have enough lands to kill him with Lightning Storm, and I didn't want to blow through Simeon Spirit Guides, because I had been through a lot of cards that game, and I remember counting, I'm like, I haven't seen a Spirit Guide at all. This Spoils is going to kill me. Certainly enough, when I did the Spoils, and I looked at the top 5 cards, there were 2 Spirit Guides. I'm like, yep, I would have lost, because his life total was too high to beat him with a Lightning Storm.
Nice.
So I played it right. I got beat by the variance.
Yeah. And what did you end the day at? X and 4 is when you dropped, or was it X and 3? No,
I dropped at X3 after 8 rounds.
Okay.
And the last loss was to, again, Death Shadow.
Yeah.
That's such a bad, bad matchup. Like, it's atrocious. It's atrocious to the point of unwinnable.
What are your thoughts on Death Shadow itself? We've seen it, like, a lot of people were thinking, oh, Jataxian Probe got banned, Death Shadow isn't going to be as good. And that could not be any more wrong.
It got better.
It's everywhere now. It's in so many different decks.
So instead of playing combo, which was what the original deck was. It was a bunch of, you know, Wild Nacaudals, Step Lynxes, Tarmogoyf, even Grim Flayer in some lists. They're trying to go wombo combo. They were all dedicated to it. They're no longer dedicated to it. They're now the most mana-efficient deck in modern history. We're talking, they have the best one-mana counterspell in, I can't even remember what it's called. My brain hurt. counter-target non-creature spell unless they pay one. If you have a creature of power 4 or greater, it's hard counter non-creature spell.
Oh, I know exactly which one you're talking about, too.
Doesn't matter. People know what I'm talking about. Yep. You know, they play, you know, the Grixis versions now have Lightning Bolt and Fatal Push and Thought Scour and the Delve creatures to go into the list. It's basically what Grixis Delver wanted to be, but could never be because Delver of Secrets is just a real mediocre card without Force of Will and Days to protect it.
Stubborn Denial.
Thank you.
Yep.
This is the most mana-efficient deck I have ever seen. And then there's the multiple versions of it. You can go into the Abzan version, where they're playing, you know, their Path to Exiles and their Fatal Pushes alongside copies of Traverse the Ulvenwald. You can go back into Jund version, which is extremely acceptable, have your Goyfs, your Flayers, and copies of, you know, your Teemer Battle Rages to have your Splinter Twin kill if you want it. The four-colored version, which is basically splash red, you know, they'll play red for the Teemer Battle Rage and the Tarfires, and they splash blue for the counterspell. Like, it's become to the point to where the aggro deck, the control deck, and the combo deck are all starting to look like the same decks, just the way they play themselves. Like, yep. It's getting really hard to not see Death Shadow.
Now, do you think this puts it in that, again, and I'm not saying this because I want this to happen, but with what we've seen with Wizards recently in the past year, there has been a lot of bannings. Do we see Death Shadow on the chopping block for banning?
No, I see Street Wraith going.
You see Street Wraith being the problem.
Yeah, Street Wraith's the enabler. Yeah, unless you want to ban fetches and shocklands.
Which, no, they're not going to do. Otherwise, you're playing Standard.
If they're going to ban anything, it's that. But this is a fair deck. It has gone down on the downtick. You know, recently it was for a short, but within the last month, it was bar none the best deck.
Right.
But now the Eldrazi aggro decks have figured themselves out. And it's quite funny how they figured themselves out. Like, Eldrazi still exists. We'll get into that in a minute. But the Eldrazi decks have figured out how to play against them. So that is a thing. And then there's the creature toolbox and storm decks that actually just beat them. If they can't interact enough with the collected company creatures, especially with infinite mana,
right?
They can't beat that, obviously. And blue red storm does not care about hand disruption. You can disrupt my hand as much as you want, as long as I wind up with like two rituals and a past in flames, or one ritual and a past in flames, if the game goes deep enough. Which it does, I can just win out of my yard.
Gotcha.
So the deck has its matchups. It's unbelievable to the point where this Death Shadow list is almost legacy playable. It's that powerful.
Yeah.
But anyways, what else do you want to talk about this modern world we're in?
Okay, I want to go over mine some because I was kind of caught off guard a little bit.
Cool.
And this is just my own ignorance. I will claim being stupid on this. I did not realize how big Blue Red Storm would be on paper. I saw it a lot on Magic Online, and again, the Magic Online meta compared to that we see at the Open, it's different. So that kind of caught me off guard. I ran into it twice and 0-2. Lost. Now my losses to it were 1-2 losses. They took game one, I took game two, they took game three. Another thing to note about these two rounds with it is that when I was on the play, I won. So it is a straight up race. Who has the first turn? I believe my sideboard is good enough to stop them, and that I have Slaughter Games, and I also have Chalice of the Void. So Chalice on two shuts them down. Slaughter Games naming Pass in Flames almost shuts them down. Almost.
Definitely, definitely. Agree with both of those points.
My worst matchup, Burn, actually beat round one, then never saw it again and was thankful. My other losses came to Elves, and it was just, well, it was pretty much top deck mode at that point. Who was going to be able to get the next card to win.
And, yeah.
My other loss came to Living End because, well, it's Living End, and if I don't hit Chalice on zero, or see, you know, my Relic or Slaughter Games, I don't think I really have a chance against that.
It's a lot of cards you have to see, though. It's kind of brutal that you don't see any of them.
Yeah, especially I'm running.
That's just variance. You can't really deal with that.
Right. I'm running three Chalice in the side, four matchups like that. But one deck I do want to talk about, and this one goes out to, some call him stupid, some call him innovative. I think this is phenomenal what this guy did. Paul Conlon. He ran Jund Dragons to a 6-3 finish. He was a feature match, but sadly was not on camera, despite the cries from Twitch and Reddit. They all wanted to see this Jund Dragons list. I got a chance to talk to him, and it was interesting how we ran into him the next day. Jerry, you and I were at the card stand, and I pointed.
We were looking for foils.
Yep, we were looking for foils because I'm foiling out Jund Titan Shift.
And, like the heathens we are.
And I just happened to point at. I happened to point up at Stormbreath Dragon and made the off comment of better hurry up and buy him up or buy him out now before they get too expensive. Sure enough, he's right there. He mentions Jund Dragons. We start talking. He sends me his list, and it's incredible. He's running, for his low end, he's got Fatal Pushes, he's got Tarmogoyf, and he has Colligan's Command, Inquisition of Kozilek, leading into Liliana Last Hope, and then this is where it gets very different for the modern world. Thunderbreak Regent, Glorybringer, Stormbreath Dragons. Turns out, protection from white, 5-5 flyer with haste, or sorry, 4-4 flyer with haste, is an amazing thing to have.
Definitely. We were at least seeing Stormbreath Dragon already inside of Scred Red.
Yep.
It is possibly the hardest creature to remove, because nobody's really playing Dismember right now.
And then Thunderbreak Regent on top of it. Great. Now anything that targets your dragons is a lightning bolt against your opponent.
Yep.
He also had Sakura Tribe Elder in his main deck also to get land. Abrupt Decays. And there's a few other like spurious one-ofs in his main and his sideboard just because he's trying to feel it out. But I'm going to try to talk to him and get him on next week to talk about his deck. And I'm going to post his tournament report from Reddit up on our site so you guys can take a look at it. And let us know what you think. Junk or jank? Or just amazing.
Junk or jank. I love that.
And I'm not saying this as a stab at Paul at all. No, I think this is phenomenal. He caught so many people off guard because a lot of his matches were 2-0.
Yeah. The thing is, I remember the one thing he said that stuck out to me, and I made the joke. I'm like, I bet you built this deck just so he could avoid Fatal Push. And his words were, yeah, I kind of built this in mind to just kind of beat Fatal Push. I was like, all right, I'm good.
Yeah, because Stormbreath Dragon, it can't hit it at all.
It can't do it. Glorybringer getting hit with it and then recurring it with your Liliana or your Culligan's Command is just bad news.
No.
There was one game he had, I remember he mentioned this too, where they killed the same Thunderbreak Regent four times. You just took 12 damage killing the same creature.
Yep, and not only that, but he also mainboards two Cavernous Souls and three Haven and Spirit Dragons. So his dragons are uncounterable, and then the Haven and Spirit Dragon, great, now I get to bring back my dragons that have already been destroyed.
Yeah, great. My opinion is I love the deck. I hope he could make it a little. I hope that if he does do it again, he just day twos an event with it. That would be the killer right there.
Right, and now for those people who are kind of naysaying now, I'll go through his rounds and I'll let you know how he did. Round one, Crixus Shadow, 2-0. Round two, Counters Company. He lost this one, 1-2. Round three, Grixis Delver, 2-0. Round four, Eggs. Again, he lost that one just because, well, it's Eggs. Round five, Red-White Soul Sisters, 2-0. Affinity, 2-1. Red-White Burn, 2-0. Prison, 2-0. And then he lost his win and in for day two against Grixis Shadow, 1-2.
Okay, and it was and the one in the pilot was I remember the pilot being somebody. that Greek's the shadow pilot was somebody.
Yeah, hang on. He top aided.
Yeah, it was. I knew it was somebody who top aided. So this wasn't no scrub behind the deck. So barring him playing against someone who plays Magic every single day, which is something I wish I could do, wish we could all do, and we'd be all pros, right?
Exactly.
But it seems that his bad matchups are the same pitfalls of original Jund. Is combo post board seems pretty bad for him, and especially combo that just eats out of the yard or creature based combo. Or yeah, he's got some removal spells, but Collected Company was such a rough matchup for Jund anyways. It got slightly worse for him.
Yeah, his round 9 opponent on day 1 was 8th place finisher James O'Shaughnessy.
Yep, there you go.
So I mean, yeah, no, you can't fault him for that. James O'Shaughnessy is a very good Magic player. He's top 8 in multiple Open, so nah, for Jund Dragons to go that far, I cannot wait to get him on and talk to him.
Plays for life.
Alright. We are sadly coming up on time. We talked a lot about Nicol Bolas and that, and then talking about the Open itself. We have a couple more minutes, though. Jerry, you wanted to talk about one tournament in particular.
Not even one tournament. Actually, yeah, the Grand Prix in Kobe. Like, good lord. Look at these deck lists. Affinity with Collected Company in it, with only 2 copies of Steel Overseer.
Yep.
You got Blue-White X Control with 4 copies. 4 copies of Glorybound Initiate. Not 1, not 2, 4. That card, the little lifelink dude, the 3-1 for 2 with life, with if you attack with it, you may exert it, and it becomes a 4-4 with lifelink. 4 copies. And then lastly, this just to point this out, what the best Eldrazi aggro deck, which I think is they've gone back to their roots, to the black-white version when it originally came out, but instead of playing all the cards that eat things out of exile, they're just playing mid-range. Good old mid-range. Reality Smashers, Thought Not Seers, Sculler, Wasteland Strangler.
Yeah.
You know, and then it's, you know, all the black-white mid-range stuff we like. Thought Seize, Path, Inquisition. You get the idea.
Oh, yes.
And mainboard Relic of Progenitus. That's nice. Okay, maybe they are playing a little bit out of the exile with Wasteland Strangler, but that's it. They're not playing the Eldrazi that makes broodlings if you eat cards from exile, etc. Process them is what they call it. But this was such a, you know, it took us all off guard. It also, I can see why he beat the Dredge player in the finals match. 4 mainboard relics, get them, kids.
Oh yes. Oh, here's something interesting in the ad nauseum list for you. Again, this is from GP Kobe. A 1-of in the sideboard, Godhead of Awe.
Oh yeah, it's anti Death Shadow tech.
Gotcha. Okay.
Turn it into a 1/1.
Yeah.
Be done with it. Anything, or even it's even good against random reanimator strats. My problem with it is that it's a 5-drop.
Yeah,
like you're not casting this thing in a reasonable amount of time, in my opinion. But then, hey, the guy top 8 at a Grand Prix, so maybe I'm just wrong, and maybe I should get a foil copy of this thing.
Yep. All right. Well, Jared, do you have anything else to add?
Nah, man. Modern's fun. Magic's fun. Let's play Magic.
All right. Thanks again, everybody, for listening and for being patient with us. We are sorry about the break we had to take, but sometimes we just can't do everything that we want to do for you through the Snapcast. But stay with us. We are back every week again. We'll be getting Twitch streaming up soon, and that's going to be at twitch.tv/thesnapcast. Then also be sure to check out our website at www.thesnapcast.com, facebook.com/thesnapcastmtg, where you can catch all of the latest for spoilers, as well as all of our episodes, deck lists, and all that other great stuff. And again, our YouTube channel once we finally get some videos going, but that's going to be that. Thanks again for listening. Y'all have a fantastic day.
Oh, snap.